I am not ashamed of the gospel, the good news about messianic salvation through Messiah Yeshua, the Lord Jesus, because this gospel, this message is the power of God that can bring salvation to everyone who believes the message, first to the Jewish people and then to the Gentiles. Shalom. This is Rabbi Loren coming to you live by Skype from the studios of Congregation Shema Yisrael with Jesus Made Me Kosher. Well, today is Wednesday, and every Wednesday evening we have our Bible study at 6:30 p.m. at the facilities of Bloomfield Hills Baptist Church on Telegraph, just north of Long Lake. Rabbi Glenn will be teaching the Bible study this evening, and Rabbi Glenn is a good Bible teacher, and the Bible study is open to anyone. So the Bible study this evening at 6:30. Also, Rabbi Glenn interviewed my son-in-law, Eli Marks, yesterday from Israel. Eli is participating in the Jews for Jesus outreach in the city of Haifa. Haifa, I believe, is the third largest city in Israel. And I wanted to let everyone know that Eli had a very difficult experience today. He was bannering. He and someone else were holding up these 8-foot banners with wooden poles, and a couple of men came by and attacked Eli and were able to take these wooden poles, and they actually started beating Eli on the head with these wooden poles. I don't think Eli was hurt seriously, but this gives you an idea of what the kind of bold public proclamation of the gospel can lead to in the nation of Israel. So I bring this up just to give us an update on Jews for Jesus, this outreach in Israel, and ask us to pray for Eli, ask us to pray for the rest of the Jews for Jesus workers who are bringing the good news to the Jewish world in Israel, and especially to pray for these men who attacked Eli just today. Well, we are heading, I believe, into a really difficult time here in the United States and probably much of the world, and I'm talking economically. I believe that we are heading into a depression, and specifically a hyperinflationary depression. And I believe that there is no way to avoid it at this point. Our national debt is more than 100% of gross domestic product. And that debt doesn't count the obligations that come from Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. And that means to me that we have passed the point of no return. When a nation is more than 90 or 100% in debt, they are in serious trouble. It's very hard to get yourself out of that debt. I don't think we'll ever pay off the national debt with real money. So I think that a lot of pain and suffering are coming our way as a nation, specifically in the area of finances and economics. Now, things are already bad for a lot of people. Already 47 million Americans are on food stamps. The real unemployment rate, like it was traditionally calculated years ago, is not 8%. The real unemployment rate is over 22%. And there are fewer and fewer good-paying jobs, real solid jobs like manufacturing jobs, full-time jobs. The jobs that are available are often temp jobs or part-time jobs. The prices of what we need, food and energy and the basics of life, are rising and rising. The government is going to continue responding to this situation with Keynesian measures. That's an economic philosophy, Keynesianism. Keynesian measures that no longer work. They're going to continue extending credit. They're going to continue deficit spending, probably at least $1 trillion of deficit spending a year. Interest rates are very low, abnormally low. I believe the government will try to continue suppressing interest rates, which is not a good thing. The government is going to continue printing money and do what's called monetizing the debt, issuing money to buy bonds, to buy debt. So the government issues debt and then prints money to pay for that debt. That's cheating. It's called monetizing the debt. And ultimately, that leads to inflation and, very likely, in my opinion, hyperinflation. I believe that the Christian community needs to prepare for hard times that are right ahead. Keep in mind that if we do go through hard times, times of trial, we should see it as God's divine discipline. The Lord can use hard times in a positive way, in a redemptive way, to change us, to bring us and our nation to repentance. And believe me, we are very much in need of repentance as a nation. We have strayed so far from God religiously, biblically, morally, economically, politically. Remember that our hope is not in living a better life here on earth. Our hope is not the American dream. Our hope is God's eternal kingdom. Well, my guest today, I believe, can help us in a practical way facing what is taking place. His name is John Abbott. John is an expert on money. He's an expert on wealth. I've known John, and I've used John's services for about 15 years. John is a member of the American Numismatic Association and a member of the American Society of Appraisers. He is also a member of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. He's a graduate of the American Numismatic Association, the Gemological Institute of America, Hillsdale College, and the American Society of Appraisers. He has worked for Birmingham, the police department in the area of appraisal, also the states of Arizona, California, Nevada, New Jersey, and Washington. He's also worked with the United States Department of Justice, the United States Attorney's Office, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the United States Secret Service, the United States Customs Service, and the United States Drug Enforcement Administration. John is an expert on money and appraising the value and worth of things. So, John, welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Thank you for being my guest today, John.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to start off with a spiritual kind of question. I know that you're a Christian, and my question to you, John, is how did the living God reveal himself to you? How did Jesus make you, John, kosher?
Well, I grew up in a Christian household, but that's not the same as having a relationship with Christ. I acted up some as a teenager, and my mother ended up pushing for me to go to Southfield Christian High School. While I was there, I got to know a number of practicing Christians, and I ended up turning myself over to Christ, accepting Jesus into my heart, my junior year of high school.
So it was through the witness of Christian students at Southfield Christian, primarily.
Yes, sir.
Any teachers have an influential role in your coming to a saving knowledge of the Son of God?
Not teachers as much as a student chaplain or two.
Okay.
It was the peers.
Your peers. Well, thank God for good Christian peers who are willing to share their relationship with the living God. Well, John, let's talk about money. My first question to you is something very basic. What is money?
Okay. Like all simple questions, it has a complex answer. Money is one of the five forms of wealth. Money is what we use to transfer wealth from one individual to another, whether it's paper money, gold, artwork. It is a form of transferring, tangible transfer of wealth.
Okay. What else can you tell us about money?
Well, let me do a quick synopsis of wealth. Wealth is money, of course, It's also education, it's health, it's reputation, and it's age. When you work and you develop wealth in tangible forms, it's not always easy to barter or trade your eggs for somebody else's wheat or your labor as a construction worker for somebody else's auto parts. Therefore, we use what we commonly refer to as money to as a medium of exchange, as a barter mechanism, so that I can do my gemological work or my numismatic work for you, and you can give me money or gold or whatever we use as money in exchange for that, and then I can turn around and use that in the future for purchasing something that I need.
Human beings have used various things as money in the past: cows and other animals, animal skins, beads, tree bark, stones, seashells, paper, and other things. What's the best kind of money?
Best kind of money is precious metals that don't rust, they don't depreciate, they don't increase in value, they don't decrease in value. They're stable. And that has historically proven to be the best form of money. People have tried using lead and steel and wampum. Even where we get the word a buck as a dollar, it's because in colonial days, a dollar was equal to one buckskin, and it was fairly stable for quite a while. And then over time, as we inflated the value, or actually devalued the dollar, it became worth less than a buckskin.
So the term a buck, I've got a buck, which we use to refer to a dollar, was originally a buckskin, a deerskin.
Yes, absolutely.
And people traded deerskins as they would money. It was used as money.
It was. And I mean, our Wild West was the Appalachian Mountains, and everybody had to support themselves. And part of that was hunting for food, growing food. Another form that they used for money was whiskey. They would grow their wheat or rye, and they would distill it. And jugs of whiskey were used as a medium of barter or exchange.
Well, that sounds interesting. But you're telling us that the best kind of money is precious metals, specifically gold and silver. And again, tell us why.
Well, a couple of things. Taking it back to the buckskin that would rot over time, or the whiskey that would evaporate over time, gold and silver don't rust, they don't evaporate, they don't deteriorate. They are stable, they have a long, long track record. I mean, If you simply look at it, gold is mentioned in the Bible 417 times. Silver is mentioned 320 times. They are known commodities. Gold in particular is tremendously stable. If you look at what 1 ounce of gold costs today, or what it will buy today, a custom-tailored suit would be equal to 1 ounce of gold. Around $1,600 for a custom-tailored suit, not something off the rack that gets altered, and not a name brand that is popular today, but a nice custom-tailored suit is around $1,600. In 1900, it was around $20, and $20 gold pieces were in use then.
So gold is able to maintain its buying power over long periods of time.
Absolutely.
As opposed to paper money or currencies that governments issue, like the U.S. dollar now, which is not backed by gold or silver, or the yen or the euro, they're able just to print more and more of these currencies, and they lose their buying power over time.
Absolutely, yes.
You mentioned gold is mentioned in the Bible, also silver. Did you know, John, that in Hebrew, the word for money is kesef, which means silver?
I did not know that.
Yeah, and I've heard that silver is the most common form of money. Gold was too precious for the average person to have, so they used this other precious metal, silver. And in the Bible, the first time that money is exchanged or mentioned, I believe, is in the book of Genesis. Sarah died, and Abraham wanted to buy a cave in order to bury her. And Moses tells us in Genesis that he bought the property in which the cave was situated for 400 shekels of silver, which is about 200 ounces of silver.
And that would make sense. That would that's good. I mean, the silver and gold both are recycled constantly. If you buy an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver today, it probably has been in several other forms over time, and it, they have maintained their value.
Tell us about inflation. What is inflation, and why is it dangerous?
Well, inflation is just the devaluation of money. If you're using gold and silver, and the only way that you can inflate it, which the Roman Empire did do, they inflated their gold and silver coins by putting a lower grade of gold or a lower amount of gold in the gold coins and calling it the same. It's much easier today for the government to inflate their currency by simply printing more, because there's nothing backing the dollar other than the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. In other words, the reputation of the U.S. government. They don't have anything backing it, and that is a dangerous road to go down. But we started going down the road some time ago.
We did.
It's an indirect tax on the holdings that people have in U.S. monetized items, whether it's dollars or dollar-denominated items.
So you see inflation as a kind of indirect tax. Why? I agree with you. Let's talk about that. Why should inflation, the government printing money, be seen as a hidden, like a stealth tax on the populace?
Okay. Well, if you have $100 that you have sitting in a bank and getting almost no interest, like most accounts today, or under your mattress, and there's a total of $1,000 out in circulation, then you have $100. You have 10% of the money that's around, and your dollars will go further. If the government all of a sudden prints another $1,000, then you're down to 5%, and the same $1,000, the same $2,000 now is going to be purchasing the same goods and services. Your wealth has decreased by 50% overnight.
So governments that won't live within their means often resort to just printing money, printing dollars not backed by anything, and that dilutes the buying power and absorbs the buying power of the populace so that the government can use it for their purposes. And it's a kind of theft, isn't it, John? A kind of counterfeiting?
They make the rules, and they decide the meanings of words. So it's not necessarily counterfeiting, but it is a form of theft, if you will, yes.
So this is not a new thing, governments printing money. You mentioned the Roman Empire. I heard that when the Roman Empire was towards the beginning, their money, silver, was – their silver coin was almost pure silver, something like 80 or 90% silver. And then over the centuries, as the government got more and more indebted, they added bronze or copper or zinc to the coin, and – the silver content kept decreasing and decreasing until finally towards the end of the Roman Empire, the silver content was virtually nil.
They had just a small piece of center in the a small piece of silver in the center of the coin, and the rest of it was copper, yes.
I believe the U.S. is headed towards a hyperinflationary depression, that the government has already started printing money. They talk about QE, quantitative easing, but it's just another way of saying printing money not backed by anything. They talk about adding liquidity, which is just another way of talking about printing money. Do you see the U.S. Headed towards a hyperinflationary state?
Well, they've been doing an amazing amount of sidestepping and dancing around what ultimately is coming down the pike. I think they're going to continue to try to do that as long as they can. At least they're going to try to do it through this election. There is another alternative that they can do. Well, there are a couple alternatives that they can do, but practically there's one alternative, and that would just be a currency exchange. That's a scary thought. Most countries have done it. The United States hasn't done it yet. But
when you say currency exchange, trade in 100 old dollars for one new dollar? Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Correct. They can do that a couple times or a few times, and then ultimately go something along the lines of paperless.
Yeah, I think you're right. How can we protect ourselves, John? I believe that people with, you know, who want to maintain their buying power and not let the government soak up their buying power through printing money, we need to be investing in hard assets, real stuff, not paper currencies, not bonds, which are just, you know, future paper currency payments, but real stuff, and specifically gold. And I particularly like silver because of the gold to silver ratio, which is really favoring investing in silver right now. What do you think?
I concur. It's going to sound self-serving, but I completely agree. Because what does happen is, no matter what they do, your wealth is stable in gold, and hopefully you're going to, in parentheses now, I'm doing parentheses in the air, you're going to lose money with gold, because that means that the dollar is getting stronger, and the only way the dollar is going to get stronger is if the country turns around and is more fiscally responsible, starts educating our kids coming out of high school and out of college, which we're doing a miserable job of right now.
You're talking about economic education?
Well, no, education across the board.
Well, John, let's focus, you know.
Economics, okay.
U.S. banks no longer sell gold and silver like they used to, but the sellers of gold and silver nowadays are coin stores like yours. Tell us a little bit about Abbott's, because I want to direct the Christian community to, you know, see what's coming, to prepare. The wise man sees the danger coming and prepares. And I believe that we should be putting a portion of our wealth and, you know, in gold and silver. Tell us about Abbott's and what you do for the public.
Well, thank you. We've been around since 1956. My dad started the corporation then, and we've been serving the greater Detroit area ever since. We're located in, we started off in Dearborn, Redford, back then. Moved to Birmingham in 67. We've been in Birmingham basically ever since. We
right on Woodward.
On 33700 Woodward Avenue, five blocks north of 14 Mile Road on the east side of the street. We actively make a strong market in gold and silver bullion. There are a number of different ways to buy gold, a number of different ways to buy silver. Each of the different ways has its own strengths and weaknesses. We have a full staff of people here that are helping people every 6 days a week, closed on Sunday. And we're always happy to answer questions if somebody calls, or if they stop in, we can sit down with them, show them exactly what we're talking about, and go over all of the finer points, tailor a portfolio to their needs.
John, we only have a few seconds left. Give us the phone number so people can contact Abbott's.
Okay. 248-644-8565, or if you're outstate where it would be a toll call, you can call us on 888-644-8565, toll free.
John, thank you so much for being my guest today on Jesus Made Me Kosher. Thank you for using your expertise in numismatics and gold and silver and appraisal to be a blessing to the rest of us. Appreciate your being with us. This is Rabbi Lauren. You're listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. And again, want to encourage you to come to our Bible study this evening at 6:30 at the facilities of Bloomfield Hills Baptist Church. And also consider checking out Abbott's Corporation. They have a great website. And I really believe that this is something wise that we need to be considering. Shalom, shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.